for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. German lawmakers vote tomorrow on a plan to boost Europe's bailout fund, but many believe even more money will be needed. Yesterday, the Greek parliament raised property taxes, a deeply unpopular move, but only part of what's required to qualify for the next round of rescue funds. Joining me in the studio to talk about the European debt crisis and its worldwide implications, Scheherazade Rehman. She's professor at George Washington University. David Smick is a macroeconomic consultant, and Patrick Welter of Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, that's a German daily. Before we begin our conversation here in the studio, we're joined by Ockman Granitas on the phone from Athens. He's Athens bureau chief of Dow Jones Newswire and a contributor to the Wall Street Journal. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Tell me what the reaction has been to yesterday's vote.
I'd say the reaction to yesterday's vote has been a sigh of relief. The vote is deeply unpopular and is causing grumblings in the population. But first and foremost, the vote yesterday was seen as kind of a vote of confidence in the government. The socialist government currently has just a 4-seat majority in parliament, and many people are wondering when these austerity measures might actually cause an open revolt in the government. That, of course, would mean the government would come down, and there would have to be elections here in Greece, which is about the last thing the country needs right now in the middle of a crisis.
So you think there's been a sigh of relief, but what do these new taxes mean to average Greek citizens?
Well, that's a different part of the equation, and there is a great deal of unhappiness in Greece right now, not just with the property tax, but with the variety of measures that the government has taken or says it will take in the next couple of weeks in order to qualify for that next aid tranche, as you mentioned. In the case of the property tax specifically, what it is a tax that averages about 4 euros per square meter. So if you have a 100 square meter apartment, you're going to pay 400 euros of taxes. But it ranges. It goes from a low in poor neighborhoods of 50 cents per square meter to a high of, I think, about 16 euros in some of the ritzier parts of town. The thing is, it's the tax is coming on top of a series of other taxes, everything from sales taxes, fuel taxes, cigarette taxes, personal income taxes, everything, a series of taxes that have taken place in the last, have been implemented in the last couple of months, and this is just the latest, and perhaps the straw that breaks the camel's back for many people.
But I gather there are even more measures to come.
That's right. I mean, this is only part of it. What the government has already said is it's going to essentially lay off tens of thousands of workers in the civil service, so that's one thing. Obviously, civil servants aren't very happy about it. They've also said they're going to cut pensions, particularly for people earning generous pensions. There's going to be a new tax also on the working poor. The taxable income threshold has been reduced or will be reduced by more than half. So all of these come on top of already cuts, deep cuts in pensions, deep cuts in civil service salaries, new taxes, left, right, and center. So the latest austerity measures are being treated with, understandably, a great deal of unhappiness.
Now, in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, there is a photograph of a woman in Thessaloniki burning emergency tax notices to protest what's happening in Greece. Are you seeing any other protests on the streets today?
Oh, most definitely. The main event today in Athens is that we're in the third day of a mass transit strike, and the worst of the 3 days. So we've had traffic snarls, chaos on the streets here for all day long, particularly during the morning rush hour. On top of that, tax officials are striking because they're about to get their salaries cut. Customs officials are striking. Finance ministry officials are striking. Tomorrow, doctors are staging a walkout. Nurses on Friday. Some journalists tomorrow. It's everyone.
So what is that going to mean for order within the Greek society?
Well, that's a very good question. We're very much living day by day here. As I mentioned at the beginning, one of the issues is whether or not the current government, which is very unpopular, it only has about a 15% approval rating, is going to last much longer. And even though nobody's happy with the government, they also recognize that some of these austerity measures are unavoidable, and they're quid pro quo for Greece getting more aid and basically avoiding a default. So nobody's happy about the measures. No one's happy with the government. But nobody's really entirely sure they want to see another round of elections in a period of political uncertainty. The main opposition party, for example, is against the austerity measures, and that raises questions about whether or not Greece will be able to secure aid even if there is a change of government. There's a lot of uncertainty, and like I said, we're living very much day by day right now.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us, Hickman Granitas, on the phone with us from Athens, where he's bureau chief of Dow Jones Newswire and a contributor to the Wall Street Journal. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And turning to you now, Shahrazad Rahman. President Obama said earlier this week that Europe's debt crisis is scaring the world. Do you feel that same way?
Absolutely. I think it's scaring President Obama and it's scaring the rest of the world. Look, a Eurozone rescue will not save the American economy, but a Eurozone crisis will be the straw that breaks the American economy's back. The Obama administration is hoping for either of two scenarios, that within the next 6 weeks, the Europeans get their act together and produce a package so the markets feel more confident about what's happening over there. That, I believe, is highly unlikely. And the second scenario is this, that they're hoping the Europeans can then kick the can down past the 2012 elections so that we can move past this. At the World Bank and IMF meetings last weekend, there was one agreement, and that was that the world economy is in a very dangerous phase right now, and the Eurozone is at the epicenter of this crisis. And the whole plan here is for the Europeans is to make it clear, if they want to restore confidence in the markets, is that we can handle the crisis. And Greece is like no other country in the Eurozone. They have a particular problem, so that the contamination is not moved to countries like Italy. If you combine the world's inability to shake off the economic downturn, the lack of growth that we're experiencing on both sides of the Atlantic, with the contagion to Italy, this is a very different scenario. It's a very scary scenario. This is not 2008. The U.S.'s ability to jumpstart our own economy is severely limited. The Fed is running out of tools. And China is no longer available now to stimulate its own economy. What's good for the world is no longer good for China because of inflationary pressures. So
Patrick, how do you see it?
I completely agree. It's the developments in the Eurozone are very scaring to the world economy, that's for sure. I wonder whether the Americans looking too much to the Eurozone right now, as well as the Europeans looking too much to the American economy and American politics. It seems to me there is, to some degree, and this is how it was felt, at least in Germany, that there was some kind of blame game going on over the transatlantic, because the American administration seems to emphasize very much the problems in Europe, which are serious, absolutely, they are absolutely serious. The Europeans, this was my impression from the annual meeting of the IMF and the World Bank, the Europeans are blaming on the other side the Americans for having a huge debt problem, for having had this discussion about coming to a near default during summer. and for blaming them that they started the crisis all in 2008, because at that time the U.S. were the epicenter of the crisis. So there was some kind of blame game going on over the Atlantic, but taking that away, on both sides of the Atlantic, taking that away, yes, Europe is a serious problem for the world economy right now, and you might wonder how it's going to work out. Yeah.
But do you see the European debt crisis as something that's temporary, that will come to a finite conclusion with a good outcome?
And it's, the question is, how do you describe a good outcome? I have the feeling, after a lot of talks over the weekend, that the European governments are moving closer to accept that Greece is going to default in the end. When this is going to happen, if it's going to happen during the next month or so, during 1 or 2 years' time, we're going to see. But if you look at the latest developments, there was talk about leveraging this rescue fund, which is not needed for Greece, but it's needed to build up a firewall to secure Spain, Italy, and other countries. So there was a talk about having a higher participation, a higher debt restructuring by the private sector, so that banks should even lose more on the capital they have invested in Greece. If you take all these bits of pieces together, you could get to the idea that they are coming closer to the fact that Greece is going to default, and maybe quite quickly.
And we'll talk more about the possibility or even prospect of a default by Greece after we take a short break. We will take your calls, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. And welcome back. As we talk about what's happening in Europe, and obviously its effect not only on what's happening here in the U.S. or whether those two issues go both ways, that's what we're talking about this morning here in the studio. David Smick, he's a global macroeconomic advisor, founder and editor of the International Economy magazine. Scheherazade Rahman is professor at George Washington University. Patrick Velter is economics correspondent for Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung. And we are going to open the phones very shortly. You can also join us on Facebook or Twitter. David Smick, I understand you've spent lots of time with meeting European financial leaders. What are they saying now?
Okay, let's begin with Greece. If you step back, you know, at 30,000 feet and look down and say, what's going on with Greece? The rest of Europe is trying to buy time. They want to give the Greeks the next 8 trillion euros. Basically to buy time. That'll buy some stability through mid-December. They have no. The rest of Europe says there's no way the Greeks are going to comply with any of this austerity. I mean, they're
and they won't be able
debt,
to pay
their,
it
their
back.
Their debt is 120. Was 120% of GDP before these programs. It's 170 now. It's crushing the economy. It's unworkable. So the question is, you cannot have a default. But they need some time to plan how to have an orderly kind of resolution of the Greek problem.
And why can't they have a
because
default?
Because of the unknown. Because there's so much counterparty risk among banks that no one really knows who's – it would create potentially a panic. So they're – you know, what they're hoping to do, they're going to capitalize this new rescue fund, the EFSF, at 500 billion euros. And the first thing they'll do once they get the money is start planning on how to use part of that to stabilize the Greek situation with no illusions. You basically backstop it. But then the question is, what about the rest of the banks and the rest of Europe? Now, the key thing to watch is the politics in Germany. Because in Germany, if you say, first of all, if you say you're going to rescue, save the euro, save the monetary union to avoid a third world war, the German people say, yeah, we'll support that. If you say I'm going to bail out the banks, European banks, they say, no
not
way.
Doing that.
So what the Germans are going to do is they've got to get through this vote coming up
tomorrow.
They've got and it looks like the chancellor might even get what they call a chancellor's majority, which is a majority of our own coalition. So once they get the funds, then the question is, can they leverage the funds? Can they build this up? And the fact that the U.S. officials were lecturing in the last week has been a disaster for this process, because the German officials say, you know, we can't follow through on a leveraging policy if it looks like it was dictated to us by Washington. Now, let me make one other question. There's a lot of fear that there's we could have a Lehman-type shock to the system. And I think there's kind of good news and bad news here. The good news is I don't think that's going to happen for this reason. The central bankers have learned a lot, and the European Central Bank is going to flood the system. They already are, but they are going to provide unlimited liquidity to the banks. They're not going to let, like Lehman, where you just let the thing drop and suddenly you've got, a contagion that just, shatters the world economy. Let me end with this. I move around and I talk to countless officials and experts at this past weekend's meeting. And I decided to present one line to see what the reaction was. And I said, so the U.S. and the Eurozone are going to be Japan. By Japan, two decades of subpar growth, mired in debt. And it was remarkable. Everybody agrees. So the danger is not a massive, Lehman-like collapse like we had in 2008. It's that the entire industrialized world slips into zombie land, to a slow funk of not crashing into a recession, very low growth and significant debt, which is basically what the Europeans, they're about to have an explosion in both their debt and guarantees.
All right, Dan, turning to you, Patrick Velter, to what extent is the German government willing to foot most of this bill?
The German government, as such, is very willing to foot the bill. The problem in Germany is much more, is the population going to pay for this bill? You have to remember, since beginning of the euro and even in the years before, the euro was never popular in Germany. There was a very short time in 2002 when the bills and the coins were introduced, and there you got a majority of Germans being in favor of the euro. But for the rest of the time, since the mid-90s till today, the majority of Germans are highly skeptical of the euro.
They want to go back to the Deutschmark?
A lot of them would like to. If you have a real vote, I wouldn't guess about the outcome, because you always have the idea that the Germans in general are very positive towards Europe. But if you have polls asking them about the euro, the majority is highly skeptical. And what they see right now is that all the promises given to the German population before the introduction of the euro are broken. I mean, there was the promise that the ECB is never going to buy governmental debt. The European Central Bank is never going to buy governmental debt. That's exactly what the ECB, the European Central Bank, is doing now. There was a promise that the Eurozone will never become a transfer or bailout union, and this is exactly what's happening
but
now.
But let me ask you about what David Smick says. On the one hand, you have Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner going over there, and the headlines the next day were, Europe rejects Geithner's plan. Now we're hearing something different, that the people in charge in Europe are starting to listen to Timothy Geithner. What is your view?
I mean, I agree that it wasn't helpful that Mr. Geithner showed up in Wroclaw in Poland at the meeting of the EU finance ministers. That was definitely not helpful, because the United States at this time are not in a position to give advice to any other country on the world. And there was no will to listen to any advice coming from the United States, because you have your debt problems as well. But on the other hand, in the end, what you see right now, it might have had a small positive impact, because now they are talking exactly about leveraging the rescue fund. There are several models being discussed in the government. Nothing's in the circles of the governments. Nothing is decided right now. They just don't know exactly which way to go. And there was a big problem. One option is to include the European Central Bank in this leverage, which means the ECB, the European Central Bank, is going to pay even more, going to buy even more governmental debts, and going to spend even more money in bailouts. And that's at least part of the European Central Bank. For example, the German president of the Bundesbank, they are absolutely against that.
So is Angela Merkel moving forward with strength behind her or not?
It's getting more critical for her. It's getting very critical for her. I suppose that she's going to win the election in the parliament tomorrow for sure. All the opposition is in favor of this proposal, and the critical voices are coming from the governmental parties, from the parties which are involved in the government. But even the latest numbers I've seen after some straw polls, she will get enough votes, maybe even from her own coalition, to get the proposal through. Yeah.
Scheherazade, what would happen if Angela Merkel did not get that vote? What would happen if Greece defaulted?
I think what you'll see, as David mentioned earlier, is a cascading effect that will contaminate all the European banks. And that would lead to something much more serious than we are facing even today, and that is a contagion into Italy.
So it cannot happen.
Absolutely. I mean, the threat is absolutely on the table. A contagion into Italy would require a rescue that I believe will be on a scale that would be hard to imagine. And that's what's really scaring the markets. I believe that Angela Merkel will get the funding, the increase, the okay to increase the funding. The question is leveraging this properly. How many times over the last 18 months we have had these hope rallies that this time the Europeans will get it right? And then each time it has ended in a disaster. This last week was different. The markets crashed very badly, about the same as in 2008. And there is real wealth erosion happening on both sides of the Atlantic for taxpayers. And I think this cannot go on endlessly. And unless the European Central Bank convinces the market that it is a lender of last resort and everyone's safe, this will not end.
Well, couple points. The European Central Bank is about to undergo a transition, a new president from Italy, and you will have a majority of the members soon who are from the majority of the executive board who decides most things, they're going to be from debtor countries. The Germans will be isolated, as will the French. It's kind of hard to imagine. That's why I go back to the question. This is no longer The good news is this is no longer a liquidity or even a solvency problem because, you know, the government and the central banks are going to just open the taps. But it's going to be a question of the credibility of monetary union. There's a German academic told me that they've already kind of rolled out. What would it mean if Germany saves, you know, it backstops this effort, a leveraging effort, and saves Italy, has to come in for not just Spain and the other weak countries, but also Italy. Well, what it means, because in Germany, you know, if you had a guarantee, like, you know, a government guarantee like
right.
Fannie Mae. Or
right.
So, that's it. That's part of the budget. That's part of your debt. It means that Germany's debt to GDP ratio, if it's Italy, will go to 240%, which is basically higher than Japan's. That's why when I say, are we all becoming Japan, people kind of know, they don't say, oh, that's ridiculous. They kind of sadly go, oof, yeah, well.
But the question becomes, which would be worse for the world? The European Central Bank's backing up this kind of infusion of funds to Greece, or Greece defaulting.
Yeah, they can't have a Greek default. It's just such, they can have a controlled kind of ring fencing of Greece, so that but to just have an uncontrolled default would be ricochet around. They just don't. You can't control that kind of situation. It would
David
be dangerous.
Smick, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Scheherazade, you wanted to make a point.
Yes, I think that one of the things to add here is, you know, if the European Central Bank does not step in now in a timely fashion with its new governor, who is an unknown quantity at this point, Germany cannot shoulder the burden of all of this. Understand that Germany is the economic powerhouse for the Eurozone and Europe. Put too much pressure on this economy. If this economy stalls, as it has, and continues to stall, no one is growing in Europe.
Patrick.
I mean, concerning the European Central Bank, they are already flooding the markets with liquidity, and they've made it pretty much clear that for solving short-term liquidity problems of banks, they are going to step in whatever it takes. This is not the problem. The problem is much more for the ECB. Are they going to solve governments? I mean, they are going to solve to save banks. The question is, are they going to save governments? And this is where the problems get in. And this is where you have a huge outcry in Germany if this is going on, that the ECB is going to solve governments. And taking that all together, it's not only, as David said, it's not only starting to be a problem, a real risk for the European Monetary Union, this is going to spill over to the European Union as such. And if the European Union is going to be shattered in some kind of non-controlled default of Greece, then you might wonder what is the outcome for the European Union as such.
Isn't that a kind of doomsday scenario, that kind of breakup could truly happen at this point?
This is the risk.
My
scenario is much more that the governments in the end, it might take one or two years that we will see a controlled default of Greece, maybe Greece being thrown out of the European Monetary Union, and that they will build a huge firewall to try to save Italy, Spain, and other countries, and to keep the European Monetary Union without Greece together.
David.
Yeah, real quick point. You try to say, what's in their thinking? Where's the leakage going to come from this? It's probably going to come with a weakening of the euro. And now, if you say, if you're going to have your currency weakened, this is probably the best time because the dollar's such a turkey. So if it weakens against the dollar, but it's unlikely to go into
freefall.
I don't
like calling the dollar a turkey.
But I mean, the U.S. has such, you know, has a partisan food fight going on and over fiscal policy. So it doesn't have credibility internationally. So if you're going to have it happen, this is the time, and it'll affect the credibility of the euro. You have to pay somewhere. So if you're going to have your debt to GDP ratios go through the roof because you're going to throw money and liquidity at this crisis, you lose somewhere. You're probably losing the credibility of the euro, but this is probably, you know, and also, when you have a currency and your currency weakens, the threat usually is high inflation, or higher inflation. Import prices go up. But in this case, you're seeing a global slowdown, but even in emerging markets, so commodity prices are going to come down. So it's unlikely that the European Central Bank is going to see, you know, an increase in headline inflation in the next year or
two.
So.
Yeah, I don't think that the Greeks will be thrown out of the eurozone. This is not a political solution to so much effort that has been put into creating this union. I think what you will see is the eurozone differentiating Greece from everybody else in the eurozone, saying this is a unique economy.
Walling it off.
Walling it off to convince the markets that the problems are unique. They're not in Spain. They're not in Portugal. And they sure as heck are not in Italy. That's what's going to happen, but yeah, not a throwing out of Greece.
You can't be a little bit pregnant. If you let the Greeks out, suddenly others suddenly say, you can't control that. I agree.
All right. We'll continue our discussion after a short break. We've got lots of callers waiting, and we'll be happy to hear from you.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, dedicated to educating wonks to use knowledge to change the world. More at american.edu/wonk. By the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives, at gatesfoundation.org. And by Vicki and Roger Sant and Island Press, which offers solutions to environmental problems in print, in person, and online at islandpress.org. This is NPR.
A reader's review of The Jungle by Upton Sinclair, how the novel changed attitudes toward immigrants and the meatpacking industry at the start of the 20th century. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And welcome back. It's time to open the phones, 800-433-8850. Let's go first to Indianapolis. Good morning, Joseph.
Good morning.
Hi.
I understand that the Greek and Italian people dislike paying taxes and often don't. There are already taxes on the population, but the governments are lax about collecting. I've not heard any talk about trying to enforce collections. Are there no versions of the IRS in these countries that can impose fines and penalties instead of imposing brand new, more taxes?
Scheherazade.
Look, they are the equivalent of the IRS in these countries. And you're right. The perception is that tax collection is quite difficult in some of these countries, which is why, it's late. The Greeks are imposing a property tax, but they are charging that tax through your electricity bill, so that if you do not pay it, you won't get any electricity. So they're trying to find better ways to encourage the population to pay taxes, as they should.
But it's truly a cultural shift, gift for them, is it not?
Absolutely. And I think that when you play in the developed big boys country club, you have to shift the rules structurally in your economy.
To David in Chesapeake, Virginia. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, this is your show's great, and this is a really good topic, but this is probably the most frustrating topic I've heard to date. You know, this was discussed on a couple of NPR shows probably six weeks ago, and when it first came out, you know, everyone was at the time, the experts, you know, basically were looking at the U.S. is that, you know, the things that happened during the Bush administration and you know, with our economy and all the fraudulent activities in the mortgage industry and investment industry, you know, and then they look at the European market and Italy and Greece, and it was pretty well thought out and decided that, you know, Greece and Italy basically and some of those other European countries basically followed suit on what was going on within the United States. Said, you know, look, if they're doing it this way, this is how we're going to do it, and you know, we can basically steal money out of our own system just like the U.S. is doing. And it was actually tracked by the SEC, monitoring both national and international financial system, and the fraudulent activity that was going on. And they tied U.S. officials to Greece and to Italy and to France and to several other countries, and then, you know, they come out with this stuff, and the SEC turns around and destroys thousands of documents. But then you never hear about it in the U.S. media. Now everything's being turned to Europe and Greece and Italy as though they're the problem, and they're causing or slumping our U.S. economy.
All right. Thanks for your call, Patrick.
Okay. Just would like to say this is not a problem of fraud. This is not a problem of overdone financial deregulated markets. The problem in Greece and Europe is just that the Greece government and the Greece population has lived over its means for the last at least for the last decade, maybe
even
longer.
Tell me what that means. Help me to understand how a government like Greece can live above its means.
When Greece entered, Greece has had a high deficit. They made a lot of debt to finance, and it was easy for them to make these debt, and there was an incentive to go even into further debt, because with entering the Eurozone, the interest rates in Greece went down, fall like a stone, because they got they bought in the end the reputation of the other Eurozone countries, so the interest rates went down very drastically, so it was much easier to go into a debt spiral. And that's what happened. And for the last decades, Greece was enjoying these advantages of a very, very low interest rates, the political pressure by the other European governments to bring down the deficit, to control the debt, didn't work out. So in the end, now we see the outcome.
Scheherazade.
Look, the fact of the matter is when the Greeks joined the Eurozone, all of a sudden, they could borrow at very, very low costs. And the governments did exactly that. And in turn, in order to raise the standard of living for the Greeks, wages went up, benefits went up. And this was going on for almost 7 years. And they were living well beyond their means. And to the point where the Greeks today are highly uncompetitive. Their salaries have to drop more than 30% in order to reach the European average. So they were living beyond their means because they had easy access to money.
And just to add to that, before the crisis, if you were a worker in Germany and you retired, you would receive a retirement income of about 44% of your previous income. In the UK, that number would be about 28%. In Greece, before the crisis, you received 94% of your income, and in some cases retired at 50. And so the question is not, why did Greece do this? They got away with it. Why didn't the rest of Europe, why didn't the bankers say, we got Greek sovereign debt, it's based on this illusion, they can't afford that forever, what if the conditions change? And so in some ways, they lived that illusion, but it was not sustainable.
All right, to Orchard Lake, Michigan. Good morning, Fred.
Yes, Diane. Your great show. I listen to this every day.
Thank you.
I just have one question. Everything that has just been said is absolutely true. You know, sometimes you can look at an infrastructure, take many countries, like the European countries, like a cancer. There's a problem there. There's a disease there. And the disease is it's been let go. Now you have a problem. How are you gonna attack that disease? Well, maybe all this, like they said, has to come to fruition. But how do you do it? What about improving on the infrastructure to begin with, through education, opening up plants over there, starting businesses, just like what's taking place in the United States? You can't cure by giving all the time. It's the unemployment that's going to be the problem. Then you can tax. Then you're capable of taxing. Then people are willing to accept their responsibilities. I'm going to take my answers off.
All right, sir. Thanks for calling, David.
Let me just make a point. You know, James Carville had a famous line back when President Clinton was in office. He said, boy, if I believed in reincarnation, I'd like to come back as the all-powerful bond market. But I think Carville was wrong. He should have asked to come back as a Wall Street or a European banker. Now, we just saw there's a book out that suggests that the president, 2 years ago during the crisis, suggested that the Treasury go in and break up Citi. But the financial system said we can't do that. And it's very interesting as we look ahead and say, what have we learned about this crisis period, both today in Europe and then before, is that we have banks that become too big and too powerful. And here you have a crisis in Europe. And what's really at the heart of it? We can't let the Greeks default because it could potentially send the European banking system crashing down because, you know, the contagion, we don't know, and the lack of transparency. And at some point, we have to have a reform of the global financial system. We're already seeing a financial deglobalization process. Nobody trusts each other within the system. But at some point, can the average person be held hostage by essentially situations where people say, well, we got to worry about the banks. What if they crash? Well, at some point, you know, the banks, you know, shouldn't be allowed to move into this kind of position.
Patrick.
Just on the point, we can't let Greece default because due to the risks for other banks. I mean, the fundamental mistake, I think, in the whole Greek crisis made right at the beginning was that the European government started to bail out the Greek government. What they should have done right at the beginning, in my understanding, they should have said the Greek government has to handle its debts as it can do, and we are going to save the banks. And we are going to save not the banks for being banks, but we are going to save the financial system. So if you put it in one line, save the banks, don't save the governments. And this is the big, in my understanding, this was the biggest mistake done, being done in the Eurozone crisis right from the beginning, early 2010. And it would have solved a lot of problems if you would have let the Greek government live with the debts, doing a restructuring of the debts and just trying to make sure that the financial system in Europe is going to be safe.
Is there likely, as an outcome of this crisis, to be a closer political tie among all these European countries that would go along with the economic ties that this so-called Eurozone has created, Scheherazade?
I think so. I think, look, clearly a monetary union such as this has shown its weakness because it's incomplete. There has to be more fiscal convergence, and by default, that means more political cooperation between the governments. So it's coming. It has to come. It's time.
It has to come, David?
The question I have is why, if you're Germany and you're one-third of Europe and you're all-powerful, why would you allow your central bank, the ECB, which was supposed to be modeled after the Bundesbank, it now has a majority of countries from the Mediterranean, from the weaker countries, that run the executive board. And I keep saying, that doesn't make sense to me. Is the European Central Bank going to become Germany's whipping boy in the future for anything that goes wrong?
But will Germany have to do something?
But will Germany pull back as opposed to integrate, which is what they really need? They need political and financial integration. But will Germany actually, is this a sign that Germany is going to become detached? Perhaps our guest from Germany can illuminate.
I think if you look at polls, you can see already that the German population is going to be detached more from the European Union. And if you think it looks easy from an American point of view to say we need some kind of fiscal coordination, we need some kind of government cooperation in the Eurozone for it to make it work. Just make the following comparison. In the United States, you have one language and you have nationwide TV channels. So you have a nationwide discussion, political discussion about what's going on in Washington, D.C. You will never see that in Europe for decades to come because people don't speak a common language. You don't have a common political debate for all the 340 million people in Europe. I'm not able to discuss political issues in Brussels with a guy from Bulgaria or Romania because we don't speak the same language. So there was a fundamental problem. If you integrate, centralize policy, economic policy, fiscal policy at the Brussels levels, people won't be able to control it, and people will be very dissatisfied with that. And so if you go further that line, in my understanding, you will further the risk that the whole EU is going to break up.
Scheherazade.
I see it slightly differently. I think that if they don't cooperate more fiscally, we will see future crises down the road, and that's one that we want to avoid. Look, I understand completely from the German voters' point of view, who have made deep sacrifices over the last decade to promote economic stability and growth, while at the same time Greek salaries and benefits have been going up once they joined the euro. Obviously, this is very distasteful for any individual who's been making these sacrifices. But I think the road is clear now. They've signed the agreement. The eurozone is here to stay, and they have to move forward with integration.
Scheherazade, Raymond, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Back to the phones, this time to San Antonio, Texas. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Diane. I have a question going back beyond 2010. There was an article in Der Spiegel back in February of 2010 talking about the euro crisis back then and how Goldman Sachs had helped Greece to mask its true debt back in 2002. If that had not happened, would we be in the shape that we're in now? And the question is, if Greece goes under, is Goldman Sachs holding paper, collateral default options, as they did with AIG, on Greece going down?
Scheherazade.
I think there is no doubt that Goldman Sachs' involvement in hiding Greece's debt for so long has played a role, a key role here.
How much of a role in this crisis?
If we could have seen this crisis of debt in Greece, not 7 years down the road, but 2 years down the road, it might have been slightly more manageable.
Patrick.
I just would like to drop in. If you talk to Greek central bankers, if you talk to people from the European statistical offices, if you talk to government officials in Europe, everybody knew in 2001 when the decision was made to let Greece enter the eurozone, they knew exactly about the debt problems in Greece at that time. There had been some cheating with the numbers later on, but these were not the most important factors, and they knew right from the beginning that there was much more debt than you could see in the official numbers.
And
well, I think if you look at the beginning of monetary union, there's one other country that everybody knows fudged the numbers, Italy. You know, Italy couldn't make it at the last minute. You'd say, how did that happen? Well, everybody looked the other way and they fudged the numbers. I go back to the question of can you have political and financial union along with monetary union? And I agree, theoretically, it was a huge flaw. It was a huge mistake to think you could have a monetary union. But the question is, can you put the genie back in the bottle, which means can you tell the Germans, particularly the German export sector, which is world class in its ability to kind of be competitive. I mean, they reinvent themselves almost whatever the exchange rate. It's a very impressive operation, both in luxury automobiles, but also machine tool equipment, other sophisticated things. What do you tell these people? Well, you can't be so competitive. You got to be kind of more like the average.
And
it's very tough to do that.
One other question from Jay on Facebook, who says, if these austerity measures lead to people being laid off, how does this help any economy? It's like biting the hand that feeds you.
You're absolutely right. Slow growth is a result of these austerity measures. The markets demanded austerity because they saw all the southern countries like Greece, and they were not facing the same problems. And now we are reaping the benefits of austerity, and that is no growth in Europe.
Also, the PASOK party in Greece is, you know, in control now. Saying to them, cut a third of your public sector labor force, it would be like telling the Tea Party, we want you to increase taxes, agree to increase taxes to the 80% top marginal level and double government spending.
And it ain't going to happen.
They say, we'll destroy ourselves.
David Smick, Patrick Velter, Scheherazade Rahman, thank you all so much. And thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, Monique Nazareth, Sarah Ashworth, Lisa Dunn, and Nikki Jex. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. AC Valdez answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives, transcripts, podcasts, and CD sales. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org, and we're on Facebook and Twitter. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.